NYPD Blue, Law and Order, ER. Those are just some of the shows that Paris Barclay has directed or produced. His current TV project is the HBO drama In Treatment.
I don't know if this is what you're looking for, but there was a moment where this old man came over to me. He kept looking at me with a strange little smile. Anna Brava. Which means I know you. In some deep, intuitive way, he knew I was the man who dropped the bomb that destroyed the whole street. And I looked in his eyes, sort of amused, kind of friendly. The way my father looks at me when he thinks I've done something wrong, like he knows my secrets.
You still think it's too early to talk about your father?
Let me tell you something. My father killed his father with his bare hands.
Now Barclay has returned to the stage with a new musical, One Red Flower. It was adapted from letters written by Vietnam soldiers and their loved ones. Barclay recently sat down with NPR's Tony Cox.
First of all, let me welcome you to News & Notes. Great to have you in studio with
us. It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, Tony.
Man, your biography is just so eclectic. You have done things like Forever.
Yeah, you'd think I'd be exhausted, wouldn't you?
Yes, I would think that you would be exhausted. I don't even know where to begin, so I'm going to begin at the end, so to speak. The present, maybe that's a better way of putting it. Let's talk about this new project, One Red Flower. It's sort of an adaptation of an earlier work about the Vietnam War, is that right?
22 years ago, I'm in a bookstore in New York, and I see this book called Dear America, Letters Home from Vietnam. And I'm thinking, I'm a musical writer, because that's what I was doing in New York at that time. I was writing musicals. They were being produced, and I had a little job in advertising. And I opened the book, and I was moved. I said, wow, these are real letters written by real soldiers during the Vietnam War. This would be a really interesting project. I went home, wrote the first song that night.
Really?
So for 22 years, I became a big director and producer and did all this television. I've always been doing this as my passion project. And this weekend, we're going to be showing it to people and raising money for a great organization.
What was it that inspired you? Because you didn't go to the war, did you?
No, I was too young, thank you.
Yeah, so what was the connection for you?
I think to me, when I first read it, at that time, 1986, Platoon hadn't been out, Born on the 4th of July, all those things that gave us different perspectives on the Vietnam War hadn't happened yet in the film world. So I just thought of the Vietnam vet the way a lot of people did, as someone who came back broken and was disrespected. This book showed their humanity. It showed their humor. It showed their home life and their longing for, the true patriotism that they felt and not discovering it in Vietnam. And I thought, that no one's seen that.
His Vietnam is not my Vietnam. Although we fought side by side, look in the letters from our Vietnams. Look for the secrets we can't hide. Look for the secrets we can't hide. I was there, pumping the boonies. I was there.
You have been involved in directing just a number of shows. You've won a couple of Emmys. And here's the question that I have. It goes back to as you were beginning to get involved in musicals and things of that sort and your encounter with Stephen Sondheim.
Well, I met Stephen way back in the 80s when I first actually, I think I first met him when I was at Harvard, when he came to do Pacific Overtures in Boston. It was trying out, and he came to speak at Harvard. And I didn't know from Stephen Sondheim growing up in Chicago, but as I got to Harvard, everyone's listening to Stephen Sondheim records and very sophisticated, so I had to get sophisticated too. And so I learned a little bit about his work, and I met him, and I was really impressed. And he, basically taught me a lot about writing a musical. He came to the first musical I did that was produced called On Hold with Music, and he gave me, I'd say, 4 pages of fairly brutal notes on what to do and what not to do.
Well, what I read sounded less than flattering. It said that you had talent, but that you should stick to the black folks' music. Did he really say that?
Well, he didn't say it exactly in those words. He just said, looking at the marketplace, you're trying to write a musical like me. Why don't you write a musical that deals with black stories because you are African-American, and that way you'll get it on much faster, and by the way, you'll be the finest African-American writer of musicals in history. So that's the way that he spun it, in terms of just marketing. So I was a little hurt by it at first, but then I thought, this is not a bad idea.
I'm glad you straightened that out, because the reading of it online just made it sound like he just completely just threw you under the bus.
I took it that way. I must say I was a little bit like, yo, what up? But then I thought about it and I said, I know what he's saying. He's saying, get out there first, get out there in front, do something that separates you in the marketplace. It'll get on. And he was right.
Now, I also understand in your days at Harvard from reading, I don't know if this is true or not, so I need you to straighten it out for me.
It better be.
That Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court was a classmate of yours.
Well, he was a classmate of mine in high school and at Harvard.
John Roberts.
John Roberts, actually, when I was thinking about going to Harvard, he and I went to the same high school, a school called Lalamere School for Boys in LaPorte, Indiana, which was a private school. And he was already at Harvard, and I went and visited Harvard, and I stayed in his room, and he was just the most, you know, studious guy ever, because he was number one in his class all the time, always the best and the brightest. He didn't even have time to take me out to show me Harvard, because he was studying for some exam, so I had to do it on my own. And he was at Harvard all the time I was there. We rarely spoke, because I went to the theater, and he went right to the library. And I guess if you're going to be a Supreme Court justice, you better start early. I figured if I'm going to be in entertainment, I better start early, too. So our paths sort of diverged there.
Have you ever had any encounters with him since he's been on the high court?
You know, there's a lot I'd like to say to him, Tony, between you and I.
Imagine.
I haven't had the opportunity to do that. I was questioned a lot when the nomination hearings were happening. I got a lot of news reporters who found that little fact and would call me up. And I must say I was very judicious.
I wish I could show your expression on radio. Radio just doesn't do what television does sometimes. I don't even know what to call this necessarily. And when I saw that you were involved in this, had been involved in this project, I was like, man, this guy does all kinds of stuff.
I can't be stopped.
Don't be a menace to society while drinking your juice in the hood.
Yes.
The Wayans Brothers comic, I'm not sure what to call
masterpiece.
It.
Masterpiece.
Yeah, you directed
I used the word
that.
Masterpiece. Yes, I was the director of that movie.
Yo, I'm finished to tell you how it is in the hood. See, because in the hood, everybody's a target. Nah, I ain't like that. I'm going to tell you the real deal what it goes on in the hood. See, in the hood, most of us won't reach the age of 21.
Happy birthday, homie.
For me?
Yeah. Happy birthday, homeboy.
For me?
Yeah. Make a wish.
I got offered this picture and I agreed to do it. It probably wasn't the best first movie for me because I'm much more, how shall I say it nicely, serious.
I was shocked and amazed, shocked and awed, as the president might say.
It is a classic in the homeboy posse group.
It
I mean,
there
are, I meet people constantly who've seen it 13 times and know every line.
Here's my last thing. Given that you've really been very vocal about your homosexuality and you've been an advocate and all of those things, with the law that recently changed in California, did you get married?
I'm about to get married. I have to stop working for a minute. But probably August or September, we've already gotten the marriage license, which was exciting. The fact that this state says it's okay. If you love somebody, it's okay. It's not going to ruin my marriage. If you get married, it's just going to make you happier. Felt really good. So we will be getting married. What we want to do is figure out a time when we can do it, when we can not have presents and stuff like that, but make it yet again another benefit, because, you know, I love to do these benefits. Make it a benefit to benefit some organization that will help get marriage equality for everyone.
Whether you're gay or straight, getting married is a big step. Are you concerned about it?
Not at all, actually. I've been with the same person for almost 10 years, so now I know, you know, what it feels like to be an old married person, and it's kind of okay. I'm kind of ready to settle down. I'm ready to bring these kids up, and eventually they'll probably have to go to the Lalamere School like John Roberts and I. I'll have to move back to Chicago, and that's all good. I'm happy about that, so it's cool.
Great. Paris Barkley, thank you, man.
Very thank much. You, Tony.
And congratulations. Best of wishes on your getting married.
Okay,
we'll talk after
you
do it.
All right. You think it'll change then?
Everything changes after marriage.
Director, playwright, and composer Paris Barkley. His new musical inspired by Vietnam veterans' letters is called One Red Flower. And he spoke with NPR's Tony Cox.
I don't understand this war.
Look, man, it don't mean nothing.
Am I fighting for the flag? Do I get one if we win? To wear across my body bag.
Hey, calm down, Marion.
Notes, Nicole Childers and Christabel Nsiabwadi produce News and Notes, Sasha Woodruff edits, and Kenya Young and Devin Robbins are our directors. Our technical director is Shireen Strausberg. Carlos Asensio is our drive engineer. Our staff includes Tony Cox, Jeffrey Bennett, Roy Hurst, Jeffrey Gardner, Ernest Champel, Nora Codd, and Zachary Slowbig. Our interns are Ashley Lisney and Blake Bishton. To listen to the show or subscribe to our podcast, visit our website, nprnewsandnotes.org. To join the conversation or sign up for our newsletter, visit our blog at nprnewsandviews.org. News and Notes was created by NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. On Monday, we'll have the latest in economic news, plus our bloggers' roundtable. I'm Farai Chidea. This is News and Notes.